League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible. Hanging out. The bad seed, the broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude. Hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live. I'm the Farrell Appalachian, right across the river through the woods from where Granny likes to get her hands on that cushy kush kush when she's drinking vino in New York City. The big apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do, but all my friends that come around, fight the fuzz, the party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess, this town's a tatter, my brain splattered all over Manhattan, should do be, shake out, ooh. All right, what's gigging? It's Farrell with Mafia tonight, and I gotta tell you, seriously, did you see the pick that Drew Brees threw at the end of the second quarter? To let the Raiders march down inside the 10, and then eventually they didn't get it done, but they got the field goal to tie it at the half. So they're into the third, and it's 17 all, and the game was 10-0 Saints, 17-7 Saints, and now the Raiders are moving down inside. It's a first and goal from about the 7, and the Raiders are going to, it looks like they're going to score at some level, field goal or touchdown, and take the lead on the Saints. I have to tell you, when I watched, and now a timeout, Raiders, I have to tell you, when I saw that Brees pick, can anyone on the face of the earth explain that pick to me? Other than, like, it's like, here, you know, the game's fixed, so here, you just here, you take it. Like, have you ever seen a pass that bad from Drew Brees in your life? I mean, the guy was standing 15 feet in front of him, and he threw it right to him like, here, I don't even want to win tonight. It's your new building, your new stadium. Here, take the ball. Go ahead and win. They were up 10-0, 17-7, and now they're about to get their ass beat. It's unbelievable.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. Someone explain that to me. It's 24-17 Raiders now. They scored on fourth down. They threw to the tight end wide open in the end zone. They fumbled on second down, recovered it, fumbled on third down on the snap, and the refs blew the whistle for some reason. The ball was loose going everywhere, but they gave the Raiders the ball. That was inexplicable. And then on fourth down, they got the easy touchdown, and they lead it 24-17. I'm going to go back to that pick by Breeze before the half with 45 seconds left. Have you ever, Mafia, in your life seen Drew Breeze throw a worse pass to the other team, a pick, than that? Have you ever seen him ever throw a pass? The guy was 20 feet in front of him, dead to rights, looking right at him, and they said he didn't see him. Are you kidding me? He didn't see him. What is he, Helen Keller? I don't get it. Like, the guy was standing right in front of him and he threw him the ball. It was like a bad pass in basketball when you throw to the other team and you think the guy's on your team.
That's exactly what it looked like, because he literally threw it right to the linebacker. There was no way that, oh, well, he just underthrew it or something. Like, he threw it into the middle of his chest. You can't tell me Drew Brees, who can barely see over the line as it is, can't see the guy that's right in front of him, and he's seeing the receiver behind him instead, because the guy was standing right there. He had the wrong color jersey on. It wasn't deflected. He just threw it right at the defender. So either his arm strength is nil, or he just completely blew that pass, and, you know, maybe on purpose, like you said.
I mean, honest to God, I was like, what? So 34C was sitting there with me watching it, and she doesn't watch sports ever. She doesn't like sports, doesn't watch sports, doesn't talk sports, doesn't care about sports. She was just sitting there talking to me, and all of a sudden the game was on, and she was like looking at it, and she's like, oh my God. Did he just throw it to the other team? And I was like, yeah, he just did. He threw it to the other team. Like, he did it on purpose. Like, you can't even explain away that interception to me. I have never in my life. And that pick changed the whole game. Did it not? It was 17 to, 14 at the time. They were up 10-0 and 17-7. And then, 17-14, and then 17-17. Now they're down 24-17. They're never going to cover in this game. And it is beyond me how fixed this game is. I mean, honestly, they were up 17-7, 10-0. What is the difference? And then they never could do anything the rest of the game against the Raiders? Are you kidding me? The Raiders now are world beaters, right? Mafia, what do you think the Patriots are going to do to the Raiders in Foxborough Sunday? What do you think will happen when they play there on Sunday? Now, if the game was here in Vegas, there's no fans. Great stadium, beautiful, real grass. Everybody's bragging about how great it is. But if there were fans there, that'd be a home field advantage. When there's nobody there, there is absolutely no advantage at all. It's like playing a scrimmage. Explain to me what you think the Raiders will do against the Patriots and Cam Newton in Foxborough compared to at home against Drew Brees.
They're going to smash him. I mean, what we've seen from the Patriots the last 2 weeks, especially, you know, on last night's game, they're going to kill him, because this Raiders team, they could score all they want. You know, they're putting up points, surprisingly. I mean, this is the most embarrassing thing I've seen from the Saints in a while, that you've already given up more points just 3 minutes into the third quarter to the Oakland Raiders than you gave up to Tom Brady last week in the Tampa Bay Bucks. I mean, how is that even possible? But, you know, the Patriots are going to kill them. If their defense is going to play like this, they're going to get shredded all day.
So explain to me, if you will, are they not the favorites to go to the Super Bowl, this team that I'm watching on the television right now? There is no way, in my view, that this team that I'm watching right now is going to the Super Bowl.
No, you know, obviously, Michael Thomas not being there is a big injury, but even bigger than we apparently thought it was, because as amazing as he is, Breeze has always been a guy that can just take pretty much anybody, just spread the ball around and find them and have an incredible completion percentage. I saw at one point in the first half, he was like 14 of 28. When has Breeze ever have a 50% completion percentage? The guy's like 75 to 80 every game.
Like, do you really think that I can't imagine that Mike Thomas has that much of an influence on the team. I know he's a great receiver, but you're telling me that this team loaded that people said was going to win 14 games that are favored to win the NFC, that are favored to go to the Super Bowl, that you're telling me that they can't recover from one of their receivers being out? They don't have anybody else that can play a football? They don't have any depth? They don't have any other receivers? They don't have anyone that can fill his shoes, and that every game he misses, they're going to lose? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. Do they not say it's the next man up league? It's the next man up league. Like, let's go. If you're paid to play in the NFL, you're ready to go. The second, third string receivers can get it done. Let's go. What's the problem? But meanwhile, this guy can't throw to anybody all night except the other team. I mean, yeah, that's pathetic. Cannot... I mean,
if you're supposed to be the Super Bowl, you know, contenders, you got to be able to, you know, come back from one guy being out. I mean, last year they had Drew Brees out for five games and still were one of the best teams in the NFC, and even killing everybody with Teddy Bridgewater in there. Now with Brees there and allegedly healthy and okay, you lose one wide receiver and they can't get over that. This is ridiculous. I mean, their offense is not checking for him again. He's getting rushed, having to get rid of the ball quickly. It's just ridiculous what this team is doing. If you're supposed to be a Super Bowl favorite, start acting like it.
So, anyway, I just can't believe it. Like, I'm sitting here watching this game. I'm like, wow. I'm like, is this even happening? Like, are they not the team that's supposed to score, like, at least 40 points a week? I mean, at least. Are they not, like, tuned up? I think they are to score 40 a week. They're so allegedly incredible. Now Josh Hill, 6'5", 250, is out. The tight end, he got injured on that play, getting dragged down. I mean, it looked like he got his leg pinned, his ankle, something. He's done. He's on the sideline. Kamara's still in the game, and then he fumbles the ball, but there's flags flying. But remember, when the Raiders fumbled twice in a row, they blew the whistle in 5 seconds. I mean, literally, not even 1 second. In 1 second, both times they fumbled, they blew the whistle in 1 second and gave them the ball back. I thought the third down fumble was still loose. Did you, Moff, at the goal line? Did you think that should have been blown, that whistle, that quickly and just give them the ball back?
No, I definitely did not. I thought that they should add more time to try to recover that. It looked like, especially that one that Carr, you know, fumbled, that's anybody's game. I mean, that's one right there in the trenches. That's not like, oh, the guy fumbled it. It's like two or three guys there, and then all of a sudden the pile happens. You have the whole offensive and defensive line. They're fighting for the ball. Let them fight for it.
So we have Kyle Goon coming up tonight on the show from the California Southern Cali News Group. We'll talk to him about the Lakers. Obviously, that's who he's covering, right, Moff? I think that's what he's talking about, the Lakers
game.
Yep,
that's his beat there in the bubble.
All right, so we'll get into that. I couldn't believe, but I did have the Chargers in the 8.5 and the Chiefs to win on Sunday, and that was cool. And then now we're seeing the Rams, they kicked the Eagles' ass, so every team in L.A. is jumping right now. That's just all there is to it, except, I guess, the Angels, but they won today, too. But I cannot believe, you know, I'm honestly like, I thought that Davis catch and shoot on that buzzer beater from three on the wing, that deep three ball Kobe style, that was the death of the Nuggets. I think that they can possibly steal a game. And if they were going to steal a game, I think it would be game three, because you saw what the Celtics did. Not because of the Celtics, but because they were right there. They had this game. They were right there, had a chance to win. If they stop him, if he misses, they win the game, and we're 1-1. So they obviously figured out a way to stay in the game and to get into the game and to be in the game instead of getting their ass beat in game one. So what's going to happen in game three? I think it's their chance. I mean, if they lose that, they might as well not even play the fourth game. That's how they're going to get swept. But the only chance they have left on the face of the earth is to win, in my opinion, game three. And then other than that, they're dead. If they don't win game three, they're dead. In fact, I already think they're going to lose the series. I still don't think they can get it done. So we'll talk to Kyle Goon about that. Plus, the hockey After two, it was 3-1 Lightning.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Mark scores to make it 3-2 from Klingberg. A shot. It's redirected on the doorstep, and Dallas is within a goal. They were down 3-0 after one, and now it's 3-2. Here comes Dallas with 14.5 to go in the game. If Dallas wins this game down 3-0, they'll win the Stanley Cup. That'll be that. They'll be up 2-0 in the series, and I'm sorry. They have played too well the entire time they've been in the bubble, the entire playoffs, to lose the Stanley Cup. They'll get it done eventually. They'll beat them. They'll finish them off. All right, Kyle Goon is from the Southern Cali News Group, and he's a regular on the bench and on Coast to Coast when we talk about the Lakers. Let's bring him in. Kyle, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing, Scotty?
Chilling, bro. Hey, so I just think that that shot last night by Davis was so gigantic because I think it did more than just win the game. I think it put, the Nuggets in an impossible position of having to win 4 of 5. And I don't think that's possible against this Laker team. And this isn't the Jazz or the Clippers we're talking about. They cannot stop Anthony Davis from doing anything. Literally, I don't even think they could help him get out of bed in the morning. I mean, honestly, that's how he's dominating so badly against them. They can't stop him. There's no way they can win. There's no way you can win a series when you have a guy going 30 plus a night just doing whatever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just saw, I mean, his range. I think the one thing that Denver has been reasonably good at is they prevented him from getting to the rim. And Anthony Davis has been okay. Well, if you're not going to let me hit the rim, I'll hit in the mid range. I'll hit three pointers. I'll hit from all over the other parts of the floor. And at that point, when you let him shoot like that, when he's able to convert like that, there's not a lot of answers because most modern defenses are built to, protect the rim and protect against the easy baskets. And obviously AD can play at the rim and can dunk and do all those things in the paint, but he can also hit mid-range shots. And as we saw, I mean, it was that three-pointer with 3 minutes left. That was sort of the dress rehearsal for the game winner. So AD had two big three-pointers, and obviously the last one, the game winner, biggest shot of his career. It's really hard to imagine how they're going to stop him, as you mentioned, for 4 or 5 games.
They can't. The other three was from the same spot, wasn't it? They were both wing daggers.
Yes, it absolutely was. And that was the point where he started talking to the bench, going back, flexing a little bit. And I think that's important for AD to show because a lot of his career, he's kind of, even though he has this appearance where, he looks intimidating, he's not really a guy who kind of brings that kind of emotion to the court all the time. And then you see him hit the game winner, yells Kobe, jumps in, hit the arms of his teammates and starts saying, I'm that guy. I'm that guy. And up to that point, we haven't really known AD as that guy. I mean, he was saying that's the first game winner quite like that he can remember. And so it's a really important step for him at 27. to kind of start making steps to the player that he wants to be.
So what did he ever say to anybody what he said the first time? Because when he made the first three, he started taunting him, the Denver bench. Did he ever admit to what he said then?
I'm not sure what he said then. I was on the opposite side of the court, opposite baseline. But the Lakers, I mean, this entire playoffs have just been talking a lot. The biggest junk talkers of the entire playoffs, possibly. And, you know, I think of against Houston, every time Austin Rivers touched the ball, they would call him soft. They would call him all kinds of names. In this series, you've seen Dwight Howard kind of jump up. Maybe he's being a little bit too eager with the antics in this series and got himself attacked in game two. But that's just kind of the mentality of the Lakers. We're going to talk a lot. We're going to back it up. We're going to win these games, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Do you legitimately think that they, and I'm just asking you, would you admit that they work the refs like no other? Like, literally, I have never seen, I'm just being honest, I have no bones in this. I'm saying that they literally, they complain after every whistle, even when they're up 20. They work the refs like no one's business. I mean, the players, not even Vogel. I'm talking about the guys on the floor for the Lakers never stop just absolutely working the refs. I mean, they work them like that. Yeah. They'll complain about every single whistle.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think there was some sense that the refs wanted to set the tone last night because Billy Kennedy came over to the Lakers bench at the first timeout and said, "Hey, everybody's talking. That's it. And obviously, if you watch the game, that was not it. But I think there was, you know, a point of emphasis for that crew to tell the Lakers early on, like, stop it. But that doesn't stop LeBron. I mean, and that's who he's been for a while. I mean, he's a guy who wants to argue every rule, every call, bring up rules to refs, say, hey, you know, if you're going to call this, you got to call that. And he's doing that throughout the game. I mean, being in the bubble has given me an opportunity to kind of hear that up close and you know, the ways guys kind of try to call for contact. You know, AD and LeBron are probably two guys who also, when they're at the rim, you might hear this sometimes, you might not, but they scream at the rim while they're throwing up layups, and it's to try and draw attention if they feel any kind of contact to get a whistle there. So, you know, some people have a problem with that. It probably, to some other people, be considered veteran moves. So, but it has been interesting to see that up close.
Yeah, I've noticed it for sure. It drives me crazy. I just get a little tired of it. I think they're so good. I don't think they need to do all that business. But let me ask you this. Denver had them right where they wanted them, and obviously they let it slip through their fingers. They worked so hard. It took so much to get a lead, of one even, and then to lose it, and then to get it again, and then to lose it on the three. Do you think they're finished, or do you think they could win tomorrow night? Because if they don't win tomorrow night, they're not winning a game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're finished, but I think that it has to be so disheartening, even for Denver, which is countered adversity as well as, I mean, better than any team in the bubble. I mean, better, absolutely. I mean, 2-3-1 comebacks has never been done in NBA history before the Denver Nuggets did it. So you can't count them out. But then again, like, if there was a game in this series to win, it was last night, LeBron not being able to score in the second half, some of the role players not looking so great. And just the fact that Anthony Davis can roll off a screen and hit a three over your star player, Nikola Jokic, that's devastating. I mean, they did everything right to win that game. By all rights, they probably should have tied it up at 1-1. And to not get that one, to let the Lakers get that one, that's really, really tough, I think, to come back from. And certainly the Lakers will be making adjustments off the film from that game, because they can't be satisfied with how they played. But the Nuggets will probably see a lot of things they did well, and they still didn't win.
Do you think that anyone can beat the Lakers, the Heat or the Celtics even? Because it just seems like, for what it's worth, that to me, and I really like both of those teams in the East, they're both really tough. But it just seems like nothing is getting in the way of this Laker team. Like, they just seem like they're on a different planet. I mean, in terms of the way they're playing. Like, I think the Heat and Celtics are really playing well, and they're still, like, two floors down from the Lakers. You know what I mean? In the sky, in the high rise.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And, I mean, to be honest, like, I think the biggest edge the Lakers have is just pure experience. I mean, they have six guys who've won a championship. They have eight guys who are 31 years or older, and age has not really been such a negative factor in the bubble because there's no travel and guys have time to recover and do all those things. So you've seen a lot of older players like Dwight, like Rajon Rondo, but also guys like, you know, Kyle Lowry and Chris Paul and PJ Tucker. Guys had good playoff series. And I think those factors that really give the Lakers an edge. That being said, I mean, look, this is such a weird environment. This is such a weird situation. You saw what happened to the Clippers. Like, really anything can happen. And I think for a lot of teams, it's very discouraging to feel that momentum shift away from them. I think that's what happened to the Clippers. They felt the momentum shift and they couldn't really cling on to change it. And I think there are certain things, if you're not happy in the bubble, and if you kind of maybe have half a mind to go home, then you will go home, because this requires you to be, you know, to endure and to last and to want to win. And you have to kind of give up a lot of things to do it.
You know, it's funny. It sounds like you have to endure. You have to give up a lot to make it, Kyle, that you're barely going to make it to the finish line. Hey, I got to run. Good stuff, Kyle. I'll catch up with you again in the finals, because you know you're going to be there. Stay safe down there, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. All right.
All right. That's my guy, Kyle Goon, Southern California News Group. He's down in the bubble and watching all the playoff games. He's been there forever. Let's see what happens. Tomorrow night, we got the game three between those two. They forgot all about the Eastern Conference Finals. All right. So anyway, the Lightning scored a goal, and they had it taken off the board because Sergachev scored the goal, beauty, on a wrist shot, and they pulled it off the board because Coleman was offside by 2 feet, and it was the right call. They missed it on the ice. They reviewed the goal, and they took it off the board. It was 4-2 Tampa. Now it's back to its original 3-2. It was a 3-0 game, and they've blown the lead. They're only up one now. So, as they say in the south of France, there's nothing worse than a 3-goal lead in hockey. They blew it. They were up 3-0. You got to win the game. You've got to score another goal. That's it. You put 4 on the board. How many times have I told you, Mafia, on Coast to Coast and on Pharrell on the Bench, that if the Lightning score 4 goals, they're unbeatable? I mean, they're unbeatable. If they score 4 goals, they will win every time. And I don't care what anybody says. And then, you know, you score 3 and you blow the lead, you deserve to lose. If they get tied here by Dallas and up 3 and it's 3-3, then as far as I'm concerned, Dallas should win the game in overtime, because you've blown a 3-0 lead and you couldn't score a 4th goal. How do you score 3 and then you can't score another one? Explain that to me.
I agree with you. If they blow this lead, they don't deserve the game. And you know what? They should have known this Dallas team is not a team you can mess around with. It doesn't matter if you have a 3-goal lead. They've come back against Colorado. They've come back against, you know, Vegas. Like, every game in the playoffs, you know, probably 75% of the games they've won, this team has been down and come back to win the games. So it doesn't matter if you had a nice 3-goal lead. You can't get comfortable and say, all right, we got this one. We're going to go back tied. No, this team is dangerous at all times. You got to watch out for them.
I think they, you know, this is just me. I thought they pretty much kicked Vegas' teeth in the whole series. I don't think they ever had a problem with. I don't think they had a problem with the Vegas Knights. The Vegas Knights ran out of magic, just like they've run out of magic every year. I mean, you can't deny that they've been good. You can't deny they've been tough. You can't deny that they've been in the Stanley Cup Finals. And then they lost in seven when they got screwed on a call against San Jose, right? And then this year they go all the way to the Western Finals and lose again in against Dallas. And so, you know, bottom line is they've been really good, but they run out of luck and run out of steam eventually. They eventually have lost every year. No matter what, they lost in the Stanley Cup Finals to the Capitals, and then they lost to San Jose, and now they've lost to Dallas, right? So they've been tough. They get there, and they just don't get it done. So to the finals, their first year in the league, but I thought, you know, this year it would be Tampa and Vegas in the final. And then literally once I started seeing Dallas play them, it took me all of two games to realize that Dallas was going to win the series. And I'm telling you, if they blow this lead tonight, Tampa, if they blow this lead and Dallas wins this game, they'll win the Stanley Cup. And then you know what they'll say? They'll say when they hoist the cup and they do the post-game interviews and the post-game presser, they'll say the difference in the series was game two when they were down 3-0 and they came back and won 4-3. If they get it done, if they catch him, if they tie it, if they win it in overtime, or if they tie it and win it in regulation. They're down 3-2 with 6 minutes left. And then pretty much I'll give Tampa credit. For the most part, they have, in my view, played as hard in the third period as Dallas has tried to catch them. You know what I mean? So Dallas knew they were down a goal with 14 minutes left, and they've thrown everything but the kitchen sink at them to try to score. They just keep pressing to score. They keep skating and pressing and dumping it in and doing everything. But I think for me, how you answer that and respond to that is by skating and playing and trying to score yourself. There's only one way to stop that momentum is to skate and you know, try to score. Try to do everything they're doing. You know, it's almost like watching them in overtime. You know what I mean? Like, when two teams are tied in a Stanley Cup playoff game and they play overtime, you can tell that it's overtime without even looking at the TV monitor to see. If you had your eyes closed and you were just listening on the radio and you didn't know that it was overtime, you can hear even the announcers calling the game, that the play picks up the pace. It picks up the intensity. It picks up the attempts to try to cycle and score, to try to get it into the zone and to dump it in, to chase it down and to get it out into the slot in the crease and try to score. Because in overtime, you try to score to win the game and get it over with. And, you know, you don't want to be the team that gets burned. So both teams generally play really hard in the overtimes to try to score, right? Now, a lot of times they play trap defense, try to shut it down, but I got to tell you, if all you do is play defense in overtimes, then it gets real tiresome on the body, I think, when all you're doing is skating backwards and playing defense and playing, you know, going the other way, going backwards, in my opinion. I always call it skating on your heels. You know, they got them on their heels. They got them skating backwards. They got them right where they want them. They're deep in their end. So the best way to play, I think, with a lead in a playoff game like this, when they were up 3-0 and blew it, it's 3-2, and there's, you know, whatever, now there's under 4 minutes to go. The best way to beat them is to skate and to play. It's not to go backwards, it's to go forward. And that's what they're doing. So they have not sat back and waited to get scored on. They have actually gone after the puck and tried to, you know, secure it and pass it and skate forward and keep moving and keep dumping it in to Dallas's end. Dallas cannot score from their own end, okay? They have to be in the Tampa end and in front of Vasilevskiy. They cannot do it at the other end of the ice. So the best way for them to win this game, there's 3:10 left, is to skate and go for it and shoot and try to score and try to put pressure on Khudobin, the Dallas goalie. And that's just all there is to it. And then the other game, I just wanted to say, because I want to watch the end of the hockey game. The other game is so unbelievable to me. because like a while ago I saw, you know, in the third, I saw the Saints moving the ball and moving down into the Raiders territory, deep into their territory, and they got nothing out of it. So they didn't get a field goal. They didn't get points. So, and then next thing I knew, the Raiders had the ball and were moving the ball on the Saints again. So now they're in the fourth quarter and the Saints have the ball. And all I know is every time I turn the football game on, Breeze is making a mistake, making a bad pass. I saw him throw picks tonight, bad passes, overthrown, wide, you name it. The Saints tonight officially suck. They have not done anything right all night. That's all there is to it. I mean, they deserve to lose the game. That's all there is to it. And I don't play for the Saints, so don't blame me. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I can get, I go 21-7 yesterday in NFL bets. 75% of my bets hit, right? So I hit tons of bets. 21-7. There were 28. I do money lines and spreads. I don't do all the other stuff. So some people like to do totals and, you know, all these other things, props, and I get it. Have at it. You know, bet on everything. Do whatever you got to do. What people really want to know is who's going to cover. That's what they want to know. Who's going to win? Who's going to cover? And so that's what I do. So there were 28 bets and I hit 21 of them. So, and then, you know, I put it out there. I'm like, yeah, I hit 75% of the bets on Sunday, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and Sunday night. And I get no reaction whatsoever to that. None, zero. But if I get one game wrong, like the Monday night game wrong, people want me to be crucified. They want to hang me from like a bridge in New York City. Jump off a bridge, kill yourself. It's so funny to me, you posers. If I hit every game, it's not good enough. And you get one game wrong and they want you dead. So I don't care. I don't play. I'm not on the team. Blame Drew Brees for how bad they look tonight. Somebody finally start blaming old man Drew Brees that he looked like crap tonight. Because all I've seen, every time I turn it on, he's throwing a bad pass. Every time I turn it on, he's throwing an interception. I mean, you're up 10-0, 17-7. You got to win the game. That's it. I don't know. I mean, he's on the take or something, because when you're up big like that, you got to win the game. It's like the Falcons. You got to win that game. You're up 19, 20, whatever it is. I mean, what were they up? They were up 20-0. And then, I mean, I can't even keep track of it. Mavi, do you remember how bad the lead was?
Yeah, it was 20-0. You were right.
And then you lose the game? You got to win that game. Do you agree with me that they should fire Dan Quinn? What are they waiting for? I mean, how funny is it that they all, everyone we hear, I think you were on when I had Domino on, weren't you?
No, that was our cover.
I can't keep track of all the people when they're on and what day you guys work. So here's the deal. I had Domino on the other night. He was telling me how everybody loves Dan Quinn. Everybody loves DQ. They all love him. Everyone. Arthur Blank loves him. Dimitrov loves him. Players love him. Media loves him. I mean, Domino, and I love Domino, don't get me wrong, but he sounded like he was ready to have him over to his house for a barbecue. They love him so much, right? And I'm sitting there today on Coast to Coast, and did I not say to Adam Kaplan, when are they going to fire Dan Quinn? And he won't get into the fire coaches business, right? He just said it right on the air. He goes, I don't do that. So, and I respect that. That's fine. So I did it for him, right? Like, I'm not the guy. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about Adam, okay, just so we're clear. But if you're not going to do it, fair enough, respectfully, total respect, because he has relationships with all these people. That's how he gets his information, right, that the teams – he's no different than Adam Schefter or any of them, Rappaport. They all have connections with these teams, right? So if Adam breaks that code and starts talking bad about coaches or GMs, you know what I mean? He'll lose that juice. So I don't have that type of relationship with any of them. I'm friends with Thomas Dimitrov, right? I'm good friends with him, but he knows me and he knows I'll say it right on the air. Dan Quinn should have already been fired. Should have been fired last year. And then they gave him one more chance. And his chance was this year. They gave him one more chance. You got one more chance. Because they played well, allegedly, right, at the end of the season, right, the last six or seven games. They played well, so they gave him another chance because everybody loves him so much. But it's no different than betting with your heart. I don't bet with my heart. I don't bet for the Steelers every week because I love them so much. I bet against them all the time. I told you on Friday on Coast to Coast, take the Broncos and the points. Do I not do that? I do. Yes, Mafia knows it's true. And then like Carver High, he won't even bet on the Bills ever. When they play, never bets on his Bills. For or against them, ever. No bets on the Bills, ever. So, and I respect that. That's fine. But here's me. Like, Dimitrov knows. I'll just say it right now. Boom. Fire his ass. I mean, did I not say today on Coast to Coast that you got to fire Patricia and fire Dan Quinn? It has to happen. What are you waiting for? The second coming? I don't understand. How do you, this guy lost a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl. Okay, you got to the Super Bowl. I'll give you that one. You get the Hall Pass. You made the Super Bowl and you blew it. Fair enough. You made it. You had a great year. You made the Super Bowl. You're not getting fired. Fair enough. But then they've had two crappy seasons in a row. And then they give him another chance this year. And they go out and blow a 20-point lead in Dallas. And they never turn the ball over once. How do you score 39 points and not have any turnovers and lose a game? Unless, and they're not coached right if they don't pick up an onside kick. It was terrible. All right, so Jermall Charlo and Jermell Charlo, two epic fight cards, five world title fights all in one night for one price, $74.99. You gotta get into it on Showtime pay-per-view this Saturday night, the 26th. This thing is loaded. I mean, to tell you what, you cannot beat this double stack card. I mean, it's like three fights, then a 30-minute intermission, then another three fights, and they are all six intense fights. Five of them are world title fights. It's unbelievable. As the twins, the Charlos, will attempt to defend their titles in separate three-fight cards. So the WBC super welterweight champ, Jermell Charlo, takes on WBA and IBF 154-pound champ, Hassan Rosario, to unify the division and settle the score of who's the best 154-pounder in the world. And then undefeated WBC middleweight champ, Jermall Charlo, 30-0, takes on dangerous Ukraine, New York City-based Sergey Darienchenko. And this is unbelievable. Jermall, 6-0 in world title fights with four knockouts. He means business. The first pay-per-view card is going to begin at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. After the first three-fight card, there's going to be a 30-minute intermission. And then the start of the second three-fight card, headlined by Jermall versus Rosario. The four undercard matchups across the two shows feature some of the best talent in 118 and 122-pound divisions, including two world champs, Figueroa and Casimiro, and a WBC number one ranked contender in Neary, and two WBA number two ranked fighters, Roman and Payano. Brendan Figueroa versus Damian Vasquez for the WBA super bantamweight title. Casimiro versus Duke Mika for the WBO bantamweight title. Luis Nera against Aaron Alameda for the WBC super bantamweight title. In addition, Daniel Roman, a top five rated fighter, takes on Juan Carlos Payano, moving up to 122 in the WBC super bantamweight world title. Go to the Showtime app or go to Showtime.com or call your pay-per-view provider, cable operator, and order the fights for this Saturday.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.